Meet the Optus Vice President of ITC, our sharing detailed learnings, tips and recommendations about scaling agile across an enterprise.
The agile transformation journey. So what was it and why did you embark on something like an agile mindset? Why did you read up on it and try to understand what it actually does?
For Optus, we embarked on this a few years back with Digital Hub, right, where we have a team of people that's building the online portal and applications. And so we decided that it's probably a good way to try out agile. So it started with that one tribe that is running on agile. Obviously, the outcome was good. And sometime 2 years ago, we decided that we're going to expand the agile transformation to a much larger organization. So we now have some 5 tribes and 2 COEs that is looking at, you know, various area like the digital in terms of portals and applications, but also in the areas of sales and automation.
And what was the driver there? Was it speed to market? Did it take too long? Did it cost too much money? Or was the promises that the media or other organizations shared with you made Optus sort of think to change the way you do things around here?
I think partly is because of time to market as well as cost. Right? There's an expectation that running in agile, there's a better alignment between business and IT on what needs to be developed and to be done in a much faster pace.
And before you started your journey, what did agile mean? There's a lot of buzzwords out in the industry. What was your or the organization's perception of what agile actually?
Well, there has always been agile within IT and networks, mainly around software development, right? So you have a small team of people who are working in an agile way, scrum teams, that's just building up applications and things like that. They are not agile at scale, per se, right? So it's just a methodology that we apply to software development.
And is it to get closer to the customer, to get quicker to the business requirements? Was that the main sort
it's,
of
It's mainly because of that's the best way to deal with requirements that are, you know, we are unable to fix in the beginning. So rather than spending time trying to document every single feature and requirements that we need, yeah, you know, we put into agile team with a product owner to, you know, iterate to get to the final product.
In earlier conversations like yesterday, right, you mentioned that, or we talked about, it's easy to throw a 300 pages requirements document over the fence, right, and then have IT deliver it. Was that also a bit of a push from IT to basically stop that feeling of always being on the back foot and, you know, get closer to the business, make them also understand why it takes so long?
I think yes and no. So you always have this challenge in the traditional IT, right, where you have the requirements. We spend many months trying to finalize the BRD, right, the business requirement document. And then it comes over to IT to deliver. And you're going to have a waterfall project where it's going to take 18 months for you to get something done. Along the way, you find that there's a lot of CRs that's coming. And you get the projects going above budget or time if you're going to accommodate those CRs. Or you put a hard stop on, you know, scope creep, and then deliver something that doesn't fit for purpose. So I think the agile is seen as a way to make sure that as we iterate through the sprints and through quarterly prioritization, it's to ensure that the guys are building stuff that has immediate benefit to the business rather than going to incubation for 18 months and then come up with something.
Yeah, with something that doesn't fit the business necessarily anymore.
Yes,
right?
So, because the market changes quite often.
Right.
So often what we find is that with traditional project is, especially in the digital space, it's dealing with the changes, right? You either accommodate them, right, which means that your project gets further delayed, or you do not accommodate them, which means that you're going to build something that's not fit for purpose because of the changing market environment or regulatory environment or things like that.
So how many years ago did that first agile project around the Digital Hub start?
3 years ago.
Okay. Has the understanding and the perception of agile changed in that 3 years?
I think there's a better understanding on agile. There's always the expectation what agile can deliver, but there are some learnings as well. The first is, how do we make sure that the agile team remain focused on the outcome, right, over time? And that is something where if you look at a traditional waterfall project, you have, you know, a very clear scope on what you're going to deliver. But with agile, because it's all backlog driven by the product owner and, you know, it changes over time, etc., there is a tendency to lose sight and you start to add features after features, which at a point in time makes a lot of sense, but it makes you lose sight of the overall outcome that you're trying to achieve. So I think, and the other part that we learned is that when you have multiple squads, it's very important to keep them aligned, because the squads are dependent on each other. And sometimes you need multiple squads to deliver one outcome at a business level. But because they're managed by different squads across different tribes, there's a tendency where one product owner prioritizes things which is not aligned with another product owner. Okay, so that alignment is important. And we now have established a process to make sure that, you know, the team are aligned in terms of the prioritization and what gets into the backlog across all the different squads and tribes.
And is that the quarterly prioritization?
That's right.
When it started, were there like specific agile frameworks you at Optus looked at? Like, you know, there's SAFe out there, there's Scrums, there's Scrum of Scrums.
We're using Scrums. I'm not sure what was the evaluation done back then.
Even though you might or might not have started out with a framework, I think you always make adjustments along the way. Those quarterly business prioritization meetings, is that an adjustment? Has that been...
There's tweaking here and there to get to I think we're still learning in terms of how do you align multiple tribes and squads together to be on, you know, to align with what is the business objective. Yeah. And also, we have now bringing the traditional IT as well, mm-hmm. who is responsible for all the, you know, BCC platforms and things like that to make sure that, you know, we're all aligned together.
But that means of having that prioritization meeting, was that something that you planned and thought of before that Agile journey started, or was it something that you recognized as a business, we need to do something about this?
I think it started with the recognition that when you have a certain outcome, you get the same problem, right? Because one outcome, for example, you want to launch an iPhone, have a dependency on multiple squads across different tribes. Yeah, the guys who's maintaining the sales portal, the guys who are doing the MyOptus app, the guy who's doing the squad that's looking after data analytics and things like that, they all have to come and work together, right? So now you tackle the issue about developers, product owners, and test resources being in separate teams and aligning them to a what that squad is going to do. Yeah. But now you have to align the tribes and the squads to be aligned as well. So it's that helps to align that, okay, this quarter, everyone, this is the priority for the company. We are all working on this. So what each tribe or squad need to prioritize is, you know, does it fit into that list?
And the product owner, each squad has its own product owner, right? So
that's
they
right.
need to sync. Okay. So when you have those prioritization meetings, is it usually the product owners representing their squads?
Yes.
So let's move on to the people dimension a little bit, right?
Can I ask a question? When you say product owner, is it a business owner or is it...
There's a definition of a product owner in every Scrum team. So the product owner basically represents the, you know, what is that purpose that they have to deliver. Most of the time, it comes from the business.
Which is interesting, right? Because a telco is a very technical organization anyway. Even IP&E or networks design is sort of a business domain.
That's right. So even if you look at IP&E, right, the way Asimovtip is supported, the PO will come from the specific area of IP&E, who is effectively the stakeholder. So they will be the product owner to work with the rest of the team to, you know, deliver the outcome, because they define what is the outcome that they need to achieve.
In the people dimension, how did you get, or how did the organization get internal support and momentum for the change and transformation? Was it that the original digital hub was seen as a trial and everyone was closely watching how this is developing and whether it's working, or was there already a big sort of movement inside the organization?
There's already a big transformation organization. So from the senior management level, we put that all together.
Do you then believe that Agile is applicable across all the different business units in Optus?
Not entirely. There will still be some traditional operations. Anything that has to do with, I guess, you know, delivering an outcome, whether it's a product or whatever, I think that there is some fit into that.
So the traditional parts that might not be fit, is that like something like a NOC, or what would be something that you think?
NOC, a run team, run operation team, because in organizations like us, we still have a lot of software that we buy from third parties.
Yeah.
They don't lend very well to setting up a squad team around them, because you have no influence over the software.
And also on top, there are certain process that is very traditional.
Yes.
To tackle traditional
procurement
stuff.
For example, or finance.
Which is interesting, right? Because it nearly means that the procurement team needs to be going on an agile training to understand how procurement now needs to have a different lens on, right? Because you don't buy outcomes necessarily anymore. You buy support along a process that you that delivers you whatever that outcome might be changing to along the journey, right?
Yeah.
So internally, the roles that were the biggest allies, is it like a chief digital officer, or were there any sort of roles that made it really easy to adopt it? You said like digital, there was a transformation office.
Yeah, support from the CEO.
Okay, so was it more a top-down, we're going to do this and we make it work?
So the Optus ELTs and the CEO, basically, that made it happen. The CEO support is most important.
So any internal barriers you faced that made it harder, like people who said, you know, this is all like buzzwords and it's not going to work?
No, actually the people that's in operating in the Agile, they are very, very motivated. They feel empowered. They feel that they get better outcome. And because we do showcase every 2 weeks, and anyone can attend, and we have our CEOs attending some of the showcases as well, they feel empowered because they get to showcase what they did and feel questions from anyone, right, and get feedback. So they love it.
So that means like that showcase itself is a great change management tool, isn't it? Because you can show to the outside world, hey, it's really working and we're making progress.
Right. Correct. And to the management is that we get a good idea in terms of, you know, where things are.
So you didn't get really any stoppers or blockers?
There would be concerns in the organization, more like people concerns, yeah. But I don't think they are, you know, after we gone through put them through boot camps and things like that.
I would like to highlight, just now mentioned about the C-levels and the management level. They give also a very good impression or perception to the team that is a top management focus.
Yeah.
That physical presence give a very good say about how important is the project.
Yeah. We talked about the showcases, right? But were there any specific change management initiatives that you plan bring people along the journey? Was the showcase always meant to be that successful and that great a tool of change management?
At the point of kickoff, we do go through a series of orientation and bootcamp to get people into this agile way of working. And we do have quite a number of agile coaches who are helping the squads get together and get into that rhythm of working in an agile manner. So yes, there's a lot of support in that space.
And then was the showcase always meant to be that tool as well, or did they only turn
out? Yes, it's part of it.
Okay. Anything else other than the showcase and the boot camps?
I guess the agile coaches plays a big part as well.
So expertise and then basically just showing, hey, it's not just theoretical, we're making progress.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you lose any people along the way as a result of this change? That like people go like, I can't do this. And they felt like maybe fish out of water. They've always been an expert in working a specific way. And now, no?
In fact, the Agile teams are probably the most highly engaged team.
We talked about the external consultancies, right? So what was the most beneficial of? Is it the expertise? Is it the understanding of telco? What to look out for? What was it really that?
I think it's more probably the expertise in helping us to set up the structure. And because they bring in the experiences from, you know, helping other telcos to do the transformation. So that helped quite a bit.
Ah, so they had telco-specific Agile transformation experience that they brought to the table. Okay.
Yeah. There's a whole part about Agile, right? Yeah. You always evolve and learn,
yeah.
right? You do a retrospect and you learn.
Yeah.
And things like that, and things just flow.
Yeah.
What you need is an initial help to set it up. After that, if you adopt the Agile principles, you basically do regular retrospecting and learn from there and improve from there. The quarterly business prioritization, for example, that's part of that process, right, to align the tribes, because that's something that we learn. What really changed for the people that's working in Agile from IT is that they then now feel they are part of the business, which is rightfully what IT should be. It's not IT is not a separate organization or company where, you know, the business engage like a contractor or a partner to deliver outcomes. The IT guys that's working in the Agile squads, right, working with the business and side by side as part of the squad, they feel that they are now part of the business and they are incentivized to help solve the business problem.
I think this aligns what you mentioned, that the product owner usually...
Correct. So there's no longer a segregation between them and us, IT and business, right? You're part of the same team. You're part of solving the same OKRs, right? Whether you're coming from marketing, from care, from IT.
Yes, and they see end-to-end.
Yes.
That's a very key link.
That's a good point. So would you say that the understanding of what the Optus business is actually all about has now increased as well?
Yes.
Agile, is it?
Okay. Correct. You create a lot more, I guess, understanding of IT challenges and capacity constraints, etc., by the business.
Okay, so it goes both ways then, basically. Okay.
in the past, it's probably like, you know, they have all these projects that they want to deliver, they give it all to IT, and IT will try as best as possible to deliver. Clearly, because you have so many different projects, you're basically multitasking between them, and things will fall through the crack. Now the business understands what it means by capacity, and that forces a much more focus on prioritization, because you have a fixed capacity to deliver things.
Agile, so it brings new processes along. So you have the daily scrums, the daily meetups, you've got your burn down charts, tools, and people, they don't get a report anymore, right? It's like come to the wall and have a look where we're at. And then people need to be trained on new processes and new tools. And, you know, sometimes people are change resistant as well. I think all of us are change resistant at some
Surprisingly, I mean, the IT guys, for example, they used, if they're developers, they would have had some agile experience. It may not be agile scale where you have the business and everything all together, but they've done, I mean, all the software development nowadays is all done on an agile manner. So they're developers, they're exposed to it. They all are familiar with Jira and things like that. So it's not a surprise, big surprise for them.
During the transformation, how did you start your transformation journey? Did you say from, you know, next quarter on, we have those, like, how did you onboard those agile coaches? You ran a boot camp, right? So everyone was aware of something's coming. So, and we know what this terminology means, but how did you kick it off? Did you say, like, okay, from the next feature onward, we're going to do agile, or was it a brand new project, this digital hub project that you mentioned earlier?
Well, the digital hub, you know, for our online and Optus apps and things like that, that's already been ongoing, right?
So it wasn't
great. So it wasn't a big transformation in that space. There are other groups where we are onboarding them into agile, going through the boot camp, etc. I think, you know, this is where they learn how to deal with it. There are some squads which are predominantly non-developer, so I guess they learn from that as well.
So would you then say, as a recommendation, that it's better to, for organizations that start on the journey, to start with small brownfield projects, or like small greenfield projects, or just go big bang?
I mean, if you look back, there has to be some projects that's already on Agile. And I think most organizations that do software development would have been on played with Scrum, Agile kind of thing. The key thing is that if you have enough of the people that has that experience, going to Agile at scale does help. But you do have a lot more other people who have no experience with Agile to bring them on board. And this is where the onboarding process is important, right? The boot camps that we organize and things like that.
So you're saying it doesn't matter so much whether it's a big or small project. It's more important that you look after the people, that they have support along that way.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Would it be fair to say that you would recommend that organizations start in a specific silo, really? And silo is maybe not a good word, but in a specific business unit that has a specific scope and where people have control.
I think the
over.
Easiest part is to start with teams that are responsible for digital. You know, whether it's your online presence or your apps that you do and things like that, and then expand from there.
What were the risk mitigation strategies in case it wouldn't work? Did you guys internally say, oh, if that doesn't work, we need to fall back? Or you had, for example, you know, here's a go, no-go decision time frame. Was anything like that in place?
I mean, if it doesn't work, it would just fall back to its the previous organization
model
structure. But it has to be something where you firmly believe in it and go with it. But the key thing is that how do you design? And we do spend a lot of time debating about the design of the tribes and the squads. So what are each of the squads doing? And we spend a lot of time talking about the OKRs for the tribes and the squads. Because they have to be, you know, got to make sure that we know what they're doing, what their OKRs are, and what's expected of the team.
Can you share those at a high level, what the objectives and key results would be per tribe? Or is it something very tribe-specific?
They are tribe-specific. Okay. They're tribe-specific. Some of the tribes, like, that's related to part of a product, for example, they would have their OKRs around market share and revenue. The more, you know, other tribes, for example, that's looking after the online presence, then their OKR will be things like app rating in, you know, the stores and number of errors and things like that.
The squads or the tribes or both? The squads and the tribes.
There's the tribe,
yeah,
and then there's the squads.
And they all have the share OKRs because they're very business-centric, right? That's interesting. So does that help? Would you recommend that to help the squads and the developers?
So you need to first establish a tribe OKR, right? Yeah. What's a tribe going to do? What's the purpose of the tribe, right? What are the top-level numbers that they're supposed to achieve?
So what would be the name of a tribe? Would it be digital general or would it be like...
So you have, for example, the sales tribe. So sales tribe looks after all the online presence that provide a portal to for you to order online mm-hmm. and things like that. So there's going to be an OKR around how many, what's the conversion that we want to drive, where X number of transactions is going to be done through online.
Okay. And then you filter, they're still aligned then to obviously...
To the squad needs to be aligned to that, right? Because okay. the squad have different function within the tribe, right? You have certain tribe that looks at, for example, chat. If they build a chat within the portal, then they will look at, you know, number of success, you know, the success rate will be defined by how successful is the chat with the customer.
That's really interesting. So who does the translation between like tribe OKRs and squad OKRs?
The tribe lead working with the each of the squads, POs and things like
okay.
that.
Okay, so common sense, would you say? Instead of like a management consulting or a PhD in strategy or something, just...
First thing first is establish what is a trap for. What are the outcomes that they deliver?
Anything you recall or you heard that didn't go according to plan and you had to like do dramatic changes or have a meeting about it? Hey, we need to change something.
I think the things that we learn, not so much in terms of how the traps are working. From IT perspective, in the past, we do rely quite a bit on, you know, outsourcing and offshoring to reduce costs of IT. With tribes, we're still trying to learn. As a first stage, we have everyone on site, local resource and things like that. So that is actually driving quite a bit of costs. Certainly one area that we want to look at is how do we do remote teams and squads to drive, you know, to bring them offshore so that we can reduce some of these costs. The other part is trying to ensure that all the different squads that are doing technical delivery, how do we make sure that the solution that they design is aligned with the overall architecture, right? So you have an architecture chapter, but you know, again, it's still on a learning basis in terms of how do you ensure that everyone is aligned, that they don't go deviate.
Is the chapter, the architecture chapter, big enough to actually oversee and be part of those daily scrum meetings and make sure they're on the right track, or is it more like a governance?
At this moment, it's more governance.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like after, right? And if I hear you correctly, you would love that to be more proactive so that
that's right.
you don't even start walking down the wrong
yep.
road, right? Okay. How has the transition to Agile impacted employee behavior so far? I hear it's been
positive.
Pretty positive.
Really positive.
Understanding the business from an IT perspective and vice versa, right? How is the leadership then changed, the leadership behavior? Did you observe in your direct reports or across the organization really that people had to really adjust and needed help with that?
Well, they feel empowered. So the dynamic obviously changed, right? In the past, when business give an IT a project to do, IT is responsible for delivery. With Agile at scale, a tribe leader who is from the business is responsible for the delivery. They have a job to prioritize and they have a job to make sure that, you know, whatever that we commit to in terms of delivery is been done. But that makes the IT guys a bit, you know, we need to rethink about what our role is now, because in the past with waterfall, you know, we manage all these projects and we drive the outcome and we report back to the business, yep, it's been delivered or it's been delayed or whatever, right? So now clearly that change means that within IT we need to also reflect on ourselves how our role will change. Yes, there are IT people sitting in the squads, but suddenly the management is not responsible. Well, there's some responsibility there in terms of ensuring that, you know, our developers are productive, they are designing something that's, you know, really robust and aligned to our overall architecture and things like that. They have the right tools to do the job and things like that. But we don't get involved in prioritization.
And is that for you as a senior executive, is that something that you needed to help your team, or maybe yourself had to get accustomed to that, you know, the roadblock?
So interestingly, it's the IT that had to get accustomed to the role and understand where we fit in the new world.
Right, yeah. You talked a lot about scale. How do different teams collaborate now? So you have those, is the prioritization meeting the only means, and that works well, so you don't need any release trains across those?
We do have a release train.
Okay.
Yeah, we do have that. That's established. But that's just releases, right? So you need to, and prioritization controls the incoming, the demand part. Yeah.
So before it hits the squads, actually,
because
you already
before
do
the
like
squads
that.
Build anything, your backlog. So grooming the backlog is the first part. Grooming the backlog has to be aligned with the company's prioritization.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's a pre-funnel, basically, or big funnel, right? And then it comes down. That's when you basically later down, because you need to sort of start planning the sprints that those features are implemented across different squads, right? And then you need to basically, then you use a release train vehicle to actually make sure they all deliver on the same time.
Yeah.
And if squads are delayed, is that managed in the inter-squad type meetings and say, hey, we delayed? And do you also see like different squads or different chapter members like helping out other squads because they are delayed? And I'm not always suggesting it speeds things up, but just in case, you know, there is something. It
goes back to alignment. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes the skill set of the different tribes are different. Again, like I said, it's important to align at a top level, right?
Yeah.
What is the prioritized list of 100 things that we want to do for this quarter, right? And all tribes need to agree on it. And then the next thing we do is to make sure we align the release train to say we are all delivering this at this point in time.
How can I imagine that? Is that like a heated discussion in a big room on how do we align? No, we don't want that feature.
No.
It's like
at the end of the day, it all goes back to the management to decide what is the priority for the company, and we do it with the squads.
Okay. What changes did you make to your funding strategies in terms of that? Because before you would create a business case maybe for a big capital project over like 18 months or so, right? And in squads, where now the product owner has more a say of what's being prioritized in according to the strategy.
You still need to have a business case.
And what's the scope of the business case then?
Well, the scope of the business case is again based on, you know, how much effort we're going to be required to build a particular product, for example, and what is the expected, you know, revenue or cost savings that we're going to get out of it.
But this time, actually, without concrete deliverables, because you can't predict basically.
There's an outcome that we want, which is where the objective comes in, right?
Yeah. So the market share would be what that business, so the increase of market share by, let's say, 10% would be the objective that this business case is then built against, is it?
Yes.
And is that a good approach? Is that working?
We're still learning.
Okay.
We're still learning.
But it seems to be in place now for like years, right? And it's at least good
it's
enough.
It's about
right?
a year, coming to a year.
Okay. All right.
We started this in July last year, the full agile scale.
If you take all those experiences that you had, especially like at scale, what would you recommend to organizations that started with Agile and now they really want to roll it out across a larger group of people?
In terms of learning, I mean, we are still continuously learn. At this stage, I can't say what we did well and what would we do differently. There are things that we learn along the way, like the prioritization of and aligning all the tribes to the same priority and things like that. So mm-hmm. those are part of the learning. Is there anything that we would do differently? I can't think of any at this stage.
Beyond that, what was the biggest lesson you've learned?
The need to make sure that all the tribes and squads are aligned. And also, how do we make sure that we have sufficient time for non-outcome? Well, it's still part of the outcome where you talk about automation. So we now put in, you know, OKRs around automation mm-hmm. that we want to achieve by the squads and things like that, so that we make sure those are, you know, forgotten.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and submit feedback and suggestions on podcast.andreasspanner.com.